story of journalism and banking this morning. In the week or so since Goldman Sachs executive Greg Smith jumped out of a plane without a parachute, you might say, with the New York Times op-ed sharply critical of the internal culture of Goldman, new questions have been asked about this storied investment bank. There were all kinds of discussions of this all across London when I was over with our partner, the BBC, last week. It had an enormous impact over there. Also, there were questions about the motives of the storied New York Times organization in publishing Smith's letter to his former bosses. Joining us now is William Cohen, former investment banker and author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. How's that ruling the world business going for Goldman this week, William? Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, John. Well, you know, it was a bit of an always a tongue-in-cheek kind of subtitle to begin with. It just seemed like they were ruling the world. And, you know, the coverage of this op-ed makes it seem like everybody the world over was interested in them, that's for sure.
Well, I was surprised, as I said, about how much interest there was in London about this. Let's talk for a moment about the New York Times, though, for a second. And again, we're just having a conversation here. This isn't reporting, per se. But the disgruntled former employee letter, in most journalistic enterprises I've been involved with, this is a radioactive piece of information. Do you think a letter like that, but for the fact that it was from a Goldman employee, would have been published by the New York Times? And again, we're explicitly trying to second guess them here.
Right. I mean, again, they have much more information about why they did this than I do. But, I mean, I suspect that if it was why I left McDonald's, they would never have been published. But, I mean, maybe it's because, in fact, that aspects of the subtitle of my book do ring true to people, that Goldman does seem like they rule the world, so that when somebody and they have this, omerta that they operate under at Goldman Sachs, i.e., everybody sort of takes a blood oath of silence, i.e., and that they won't ever talk to the press, so that when somebody does sort of break ranks in such a public, high-profile way and spill their guts in the pages of the New York Times about Goldman Sachs, that becomes big news.
And, of course, the relative of the founder of Goldman Sachs from a semi-retirement location out west made the point that he actually supported Greg Smith and thought that the company had deteriorated over the years. But Mayor Bloomberg, our billionaire mayor here in New York City, came to the defense of Goldman. Listen to this over the weekend.
I just wanted to say to the people at Goldman, look, I've never worked at Goldman, but there's an awful lot of people there that work very hard. They pay taxes. They live in this city. And we want to have more companies come and locate here. And I thought the news coverage was ridiculous, isn't even quite the right word.
Is that a characterization by Mayor Bloomberg of the omerta, as you call it, at Goldman? They work hard. They pay their taxes. It's as simple as that?
Well, I don't think it is quite as simple as that. I mean, first of all, let's make sure everybody understands that Wall Street is not a charitable organization. By the way, neither is every corporation, nearly every corporation on the face of the earth. I mean, they're in business to make money. Wall Street firms are in business to make as much money as they possibly can every single day. And they make money by supposedly giving good service to their clients, and sometimes when their clients are counterparties, i.e. on the other side of a trade, you know, they only win if their clients lose. And you know, Greg Smith made it seem like, you know, he just sort of woke up to the fact that Goldman Sachs was behaved this way some point in the last year or two. As I've written repeatedly in my book, there are instances over the last 100 years when Goldman Sachs has acted this way and much worse. And so this is nothing new. It's nothing new about Goldman Sachs. It's nothing new about Wall Street at all. This is the nature of sort of Darwinian capitalism, you know, on Wall Street. You know, the interesting thing here is that this appeared at all.
You know, Mayor Bloomberg, in a further comment on the radio, we won't play it, but it's a great quote. He described one of the Bloomberg editorials on this that was very much in support of Goldman. Bloomberg said, Goldman is not the Make-A-Wish Foundation. You know, surprise, surprise. And you've sort of made that point as well. Is there one thing that there is new here, though? Some of the characterizations of Goldman's behavior towards clients and the notion of a conflict of interest. Is it harder and harder to separate out any of these sort of conflicting interests in a modern investment bank, in the sense that so much is computerized, so many securitized derivatives are aggregated, with pieces from lots of different clients, and the analyst and the trader, often trade jobs, over the course of careers, so sometimes over the course of a year.
Look, there's no question that Wall Street is much more complex than it used to be, whether it's computerization, or whether it's, Goldman now has 30,000 people working there. It's a huge global organization. Ever since these firms started going public in 1970, they had access to much more capital than they ever had when they were private partnerships. They used that capital to often take, huge proprietary trading risks and get into lines of businesses like underwriting mortgage-backed securities that they never would have conceived of back when they were private partnerships, because it was just too much capital required and too much risk involved. Now there are these big complex institutions. At Goldman, they pride themselves on being able to, quote-unquote, manage all of these conflicts, manage all of these risks. By and large, to be fair to them, they do a pretty good job of that, generally speaking. But, what people aren't thinking about, much since Greg Smith wrote his op-ed, is that on February 29th, Judge Leo Strine in the Delaware Chancery wrote a scathing opinion about Goldman's inability to manage its conflict in a merger deal last year. This was after the financial crisis, after they had been criticized by Senator Levin in Congress, after they had issued a new business standards report in January of 2011 where they implied that they were going to change their behavior. Last summer, they got themselves into all sorts of hot water with this merger involving Kinder Morgan and El Paso, and that is quite a revelatory document that's astounding, even more so than Greg Smith, although didn't get picked up nearly as much.
And indeed, in a challenged Wall Street environment where the bonuses aren't as hefty as they used to be, the internal culture of Goldman, at least if we look at Greg Smith's op-ed, is just not a terribly pleasant place for a lot of those employees, and that begins to constitute the Goldman brand. William Cohen, former investment banker and author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. William, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.